welcome to this week's political podcast, Bowler's Desk Political Podcast with me, Matt Bowler, and Rick Epps, the political professor. This week we were down over at the Oregon Pavilion, hanging out in the shade so that I wouldn't get sunburned because I burn easily. What are you going to do? I'm Irish. And we, of course, talked all about potential mayoral candidates and official mayoral candidates and what's next for the city, at least what we think is interesting about this whole process. And Syria, because that is Rick's area of expertise, being a former Air Force intelligence that was stationed there. Just post a lot of his work at UCLA. So we talked about the Assad regime, where Russia fits in. Of course, we talked about San Diego politics, who's running for mayor, Nathan Fletcher, Mike Aguirre, maybe Carl DeMaio, Todd Gloria, how he's kind of in a good position now to make himself, increase his profile, make himself more known, if that would be the turn of phrase for that, within San Diego's Democratic Party, and where the city could be going from there. So, you know, if you want to, you hear what we have to say and it makes you want to hop on your soapbox, you can do that by hopping on ours. Just give us a call, 619-663-4531. 619-663-4531. And we just may put you on the Bowler's Desk Political Podcast. All right, so here we go. Rick Epps, Matt Bowler from the Oregon Pavilion in Balboa Park, talking San Diego politics and international politics. Bowler's Desk, San Diego Political Podcast. Enjoy.
The Oregon Pavilion. See all the prettiness behind us. And of course, we're sitting in the shade because
the SC guy over there.
White boys like me.
UCLA guy.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
And my Aztecs lost.
But that's okay.
That wasn't even just a loss,
okay.
My friend. I hope they pull it together. That was okay. A country whooping. But hopefully they'll get it together. I mean, Rocky's a good guy, and he's got a good team.
You know? I don't. I don't follow it closely enough because every time I start to follow it, I get disappointed. That's why I don't follow Chargers. You know, it's my superstition. If I don't follow them, I don't get disappointed.
Yeah. You know? Well, at least you'll know if they disappoint the first few weeks, then you can watch them because you know it's not you.
Yeah,
right?
Because then okay. I know it's not me. Then my superstition is okay. That's what it is. It's like, you know, baseball players, you know, they jump over the line and
exactly.
They land on the thing on their left foot the first time. Well, it's the same thing. If I follow them for the first couple weeks, they will lose. But if I don't, they may do okay.
I know. So I'm trying to. I watched the Bruins for the first time. I almost turned it off because I was worried about my Bruins losing. Yes, UCLA, go Bruins. Come on, you guys, please. Yeah. Scared the hell out of me early on, though.
Yeah. So
a lot happened this week.
Yeah, this was a fun week with Filner. Filner's last official week, Todd Gloria taking the helm Friday evening under, you know, he didn't have any fanfare when he did it.
Nope.
And it doesn't look like he's going to run. He did the whole, I'm considering, but I don't think he's going to throw his hat into the ring.
Yeah, I don't see him doing that either. Even though I think he's going to make a case for his ability. It'll show his ability.
Sure, but he's looking at a bigger, bigger
so.
Office.
Yeah,
he wants
I think
to
so
go to
too.
D.C.
Yeah, but this could be a nice launching point, depending on how he pulls this all together for the next couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
Could be a nice segue for him. So, you know, it's important that he shines right now.
Yeah, sure, and he'll do well. I mean, and it's the good thing about being the interim mayor. You can... There's not much you can do, and he couldn't be any worse.
Yeah,
unless you don't sexually harass anyone, you'll be okay.
Exactly. So and that you're right, but that makes
all it, he's got to do is just show up on time every day.
Yeah, and
get a gentleman's bean.
I know.
Think it's doing great.
Just don't push any buttons, and you're good to go, right?
Yeah,
just stand there, have a Krispy Kreme, and just relax. And
uh-huh,
go. But you know, it's interesting because on one hand, though, that's true. On the other hand, though. If he has higher aspirations for another type of office, then he really needs to...
He could shine.
He needs to do a couple things maybe over the next couple of months, which I think he really wants to. Even on, he's made some comments and changed a few things already. Just, you know... Knocked down a few of Filner's early ideas.
He's shifted them more towards what he was on the side of in the first place.
Yeah.
So these were things that he didn't agree with Filner on.
Exactly.
To begin with. So it was a great opportunity for him. And he knew the rest of the city council didn't quite agree with Filner either. So he knew it was a great opportunity for him to make a few relatively small changes, but very quickly.
Yeah.
And show that he's effective immediately.
Exactly. And that he can get partisan. He's got to have partisans.
Yeah.
So he's really got to make sure that happens, you know.
Yeah, so it was smart of him to do and they were pretty minor things.
Yeah, I'm curious to see if they're going to stay minor. That'll be interesting to see if they stay minor or if, in fact, they actually get to...
What else could he do? I mean, the only other big thing is what Logan Heights... There's this Logan Heights plan.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's the only other big thing.
Which is a huge plan. It's important, actually, for that community, big time. It really changes the dynamic.
But I don't think there's any controversial aspect to it that Glory is not gonna be able to iron out.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing, I guess, is all the industrial land and how to zone that.
Yeah.
Although I think the way they do zoning a lot of times is so screwed up, and so you end up with these suburbs and then business districts. When these days, I mean, it's just, I guess down there it's industrial versus suburbs, right?
Yeah.
Industrial produces a lot of pollution, so that's why you need to pay attention to it more than you would just like a normal sort of business district like downtown or you know, a lot of other places where it's just be shops and offices.
Yeah,
you're not getting shops and offices in Logan Heights.
Yeah, the thing that happens is it also then it becomes an issue of race too. Let's face it, the issue of
that's been in that part of town
exactly
since the 50s since I was born.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean,
even before then. Yeah, but 40s and 50s certainly. But So the commercial aspect is important, but the citizens that live in that part of town, you know, are going to be watching very carefully to see how things are chopped up.
You think people in that part of town are more politically active than in other parts of town? You know? I mean, it's got more of a political kind of activist history.
Yeah. It's interesting because the demographic has shifted a little bit. You know, it used to be a lot of that area was predominantly black.
Yeah.
And then
it
switched to being predominantly Latino, Hispanic Latino. In a lot of the areas. So whether or not the populations that reside there now are more politically aware, if they're not, they're going to get pushed to be more politically aware by the people who represent that community.
Yeah.
Because anything that happens in that community, if it doesn't benefit the people there, the representatives and the city council rep for that area is going to definitely be, on the hot seat. So if George Stevens was there, it'd certainly be. He would certainly be making sure that it got some due diligence. So I think, I think it will be political, and they'll get the people. One thing about the people in that area, they will definitely they'll rally around the cause if you can clearly explain to them what the significance is. No matter
they're there for you.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Do you think
they're
there for these issues more than like Claremont?
Oh, yeah, I think
Yeah.
I think people, people are more, city-centric, in their own regions. Yeah. So if their own regions are in jeopardy or in, there's some question, political aspect in their region,
but
then you'll
see
changes.
But I think they're more there, like the people in Barrio Logan and Logan Heights are more there politically for their community than the people in Claremont are there for their community. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Do you think Claremont's more politically aware, or do they handle things very differently? Is it more of an activist style in Barrio Logan and less and more of an institutional kind of system?
That's a very good point. Yeah, I think that's a very good point. I think you do see more of an activist grassroots. The money, there's not as much money in Barrio Logan as there is certainly in Claremont, particularly where you happen to be in Claremont. So,
Bayhoe area.
Exactly.
Those people are well funded.
So you probably have more, because they have more politically and economically at stake, you probably see certain, even within Claremont area, which is fairly large, see certain, if you broke it down into subdivisions within that area, you'd probably find demographics that suggest very strong activism in other areas where it's completely disconnected and it's just sort of institutionalized. So I think that's probably the case in like La Mesa and other areas that are upper middle class that you probably find.
Yeah, La Mesa is even more unique because it's its own city.
Yeah.
So they have a whole different, but people don't think of themselves as not living in San Diego.
When
they live in La Mesa, but they don't live in San Diego, they live in La Mesa.
Yeah.
It's an interesting little city within a city.
Them
and National City have just this bizarre relationship with their citizenry because a lot of people that live there don't even understand they're not in San Diego.
Exactly. Because they don't understand the city versus the
county,
and sub-cities within cities.
Uh-huh.
They don't get all that stuff.
Yeah.
I know. I grew up in La Mesa, so I know.
That's how the mayor there can get away with the DUI and not have any problems because, it did make a few headlines, but
yeah. But he's
nothing like it. I mean,
nothing
there
like
was no
here.
Recall.
No, no, no. And strangely enough, you know, I mean, he's managed to be Teflon coated so far.
It's that small town politics, that exclusionary. There's a select group of people there that are in charge of that area.
So. Yeah. Well, I mean, San Diego has the same thing. Now we're going to the notion of what happens with who the heir apparent's going to be, right?
Yeah. So Fletcher definitely is running.
Yeah.
So is Micah Gehry.
Yeah.
And so on the Democratic ticket, so the difference there being that Fletcher has the support of Irwin Jacobs and that kind of
that money,
that money, and that those people within the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
Whereas Micah Gehry seems to be more of that. Number one, he can pay for it himself.
Yeah.
But number two, he seems to be more traditional in that. It's similar to Filner in that sense.
Yeah.
To where he's got that more traditional Democratic Party support.
Yeah.
Now, whether or not he is someone that can actually win or not, it's a different story.
Yeah. Do you think he's too controversial? And so, I mean, I shouldn't say controversial. I mean, he's a guy who doesn't mind getting in your face. So, I mean,
he's the same as shares that with Filner in a lot of ways, but Gehry, I think, makes a better argument than Filner. And Gehry doesn't have that kind of history of entitlement that Filner seems to have.
Yeah.
But he'll fight with anybody.
Yeah.
And the challenge he had is that when he was city attorneys, he was trying to make these extremely complicated arguments.
Yeah.
And he's doing it in a complicated way.
Yeah.
And so he wasn't able to communicate his message at all. Even though, you know, you can argue the issue of whether or not Mike was right, you know, when he was doing the pension
and all
that stuff, you know, and then a couple of years later, they come in and do pension reform that's kind of similar to what he was going for in the first place.
Yeah.
But because Mike wasn't able to communicate his message well enough and elegantly enough, I don't like to say simple because simple implies stupid, and it's not stupid. It's in an elegant enough fashion to where people would understand it and value what he was saying.
Yeah.
He was trying to explain it in very complicated, kind of obtuse ways that he got lost. You know, people would get lost in the trees with him.
Yeah, it's like being in a class at a university and you've got a brilliant professor. And
exactly. I mean, I think Mike's a smart guy.
Yeah.
I think his brother's really smart. His brother's a big SEC guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and those are things that I don't understand the SEC. The SEC is just confusing to me.
The SEC doesn't understand the SEC, okay?
I don't get it. I don't know what they're doing and who they have authority over and how they exercise this authority and when their regulations count. Sometimes they don't seem to count. It's confusing.
We're talking about the Security Exchange Commission, for those who don't know. So just in case.
Yeah, and so, you know, and Mike's brother, smart guy. They both understand it, but they're both brilliant at what they do.
Mm.
I don't know if he's going to be able to get past the history as this feisty, abrasive, your favorite word, irascible.
Yeah. It's a good word, but it's a problematic word, too. It's a good thing, but it's a double-edged sword because the word, you want somebody who's not afraid to confront, but you also want somebody who, you know, who's not in a combative mode all the time. You
exactly.
Know?
And Mike's a fighter. Yeah. And I respect that, and I think that's what has made him a great lawyer.
Yeah.
Is that he's a fighter, but I don't know if he's got the kind of the elegance within the public sphere to win this.
Yeah, especially on the Democratic side, it's interesting because, you know, Nathan is just getting his Democrat footing.
It's a little early for him. He hasn't really had a chance to prove himself, has he?
Yeah.
You know, and is he going to be valued? Right?
Yeah.
Not value is not the right word, but is he going to, does he have the credentials?
Yeah, and then the thing about it is that how much does Micah Gehry pull away from his, but from his platform.
Yeah.
I think Nathan brings on that side is just, you know, as he redefines himself,
mm-hmm.
is his ability to work with both sides and work in the middle. And I think that's pretty powerful. And he tends to be a person who Bill works on consensus. He's an easy to get along with person.
DeMaio's considering his run too. Now, whether or not he will or not, we had him on the morning show the other day, and he was, of course, already teasing Fletcher about not, you know, switching sides and, you know, being wishy-washy and that kind of stuff. That's going to be the easy get on Nathan is, you know, you don't know who you are. Yeah. You know, you were on one side, you're on the other side. You're just going to switch sides based on which way you think the wind is blowing. You don't have your convictions and sticking to them. That, you know, that's easy enough to counter with, well,
yeah, which I'm
sure
you will.
People change. Yeah. This is what I think now.
Yeah, the Republican Party is not what I thought it was or what it used to be. So therefore, I mean, you can easily make that paradigm shift and make a good argument for it very clearly. But he needs but he needs to do that early on. I think Nathan needs to make that clear early on, so that it doesn't come back.
He doesn't have a lot of time to make that to make that clear, and how that's gonna how he's gonna be able to do that or not.
Yeah.
But you know, DeMaio was making this run for Congress. I don't know if he seriously had or seriously has the traction in his congressional run at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still what, a year out?
Yeah.
You know, for that election. So does he? Does he? Will he be able to pull it out in a year? That's what he's weighing right now.
Yeah.
Can I win in a year? And then do I want to keep campaigning every 2 years? Because that's what it's going to take in that district him to win against Peters.
Plus, he's still stuck. I mean, let's face it, unfortunately, he's stuck in controversy, too.
He's a controversial character. Yeah. In a lot of the same ways that Mike Aguirre is, in a lot of the same ways that Filner was.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're all controversial characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Except for Fletcher.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't mind controversy. You know, I actually kind of I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Just, you know.
Yeah, I don't mind people being controversial.
You know,
when
I want people to go for it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not afraid of people who've had their feet be a little dirty either. I mean, I think, you know, if you have somebody who was born to privilege, who's never had to, you know, lived in the ivory tower, if you would, forever, and never had to go out and really know what it's like to deal with the real world, I don't really want that person, to be honest with you, because that person doesn't live in a reality that really shows that they are or understand.
You know,
I don't want the Boy Scout. I don't need a Boy Scout.
DeMaio's representing this new kind of libertarian wing of San Diego's Republican Party that's been able to put itself forward and has been able to seize a lot of power within the party now.
Yeah.
And that's their kind of push. And this is the direction that San Diego's party's got. And I don't necessarily see that as necessarily a bad thing. You know, there's a lot that libertarians, I think, bring positive things that they bring to the table.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's the right choice.
Well, again, it gets pretty dicey because you have to decide what type of Republicans reside in San Diego. Are they Tea Party Republicans, are they Libertarian Republicans, or are they the moral far-right, moral majority Republicans? Mm-hmm. And that's the question. And if they're broken down, let's say if they're broken down equally in thirds, then you really got a problem because you can't – they're so diametrically opposed to each other that how do you actually make their –
But they'll vote Republican when the election comes. Yeah. They're not going to split over – they're not going to not vote. Like, Democrats will just not vote.
Yeah.
They're not going to not vote for a Republican. They'll show up and they'll vote Republican even if they don't necessarily agree with that Republican.
Well, but here's – and actually, let me ask – there's actually a fourth component there, and that's the moderate Republican. There's who sits in the middle, who actually would consider voting for a person on the opposite side, simply that, like – a Nathan Fletcher type would actually –
do you think there's enough of them?
Well, that's the question. That's the big question, is whether there's actually enough of them to actually push forward that agenda. And then the other part for Nathan Fletcher is how big is the moderate Democratic faction that would actually buy into this? Mm-hmm. And how do you get the other ones that are a little bit further to the left to buy into where you're coming from? And, you know, again, I mean, when you're talking about it from the – let's take Filner's old term, the poor Democrat, right, which he used to always say, I'm just a poor Democrat. Well, those in the Democratic side, which happen to sit in the lower income, lower middle income area, you know, where do they find their footing? And if they, you know, will they find it more with a Mike Aguirre, or will they find it more with a Nathan Fletcher type? And that's going to be an interesting selling point for how well you show the Democrats on whatever spectrum on the left how in touch you are with where they're at. Mm-hmm. That's a big question. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with this. And anybody else that you know of that's throwing their hat in the ring?
I know Kevin Faulkner's serious look at it. He hasn't officially announced yet, but I think he's going to.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's got the name recognition, especially if DeMaio decides to go after it. I don't, you know. Although Faulkner's one of those reasonable Republicans. He's a pretty mellow, centrist-y kind of guy. I could see if it was Faulkner, Fletcher, there being a real – that being an extremely tight race.
Yeah.
You know, and based on the sort of ancillary party people that have already registered, they're all kind of right-wingers, from what I can tell.
Yeah.
That would favor Fletcher. That's assuming that Aguirre drops out of the race.
Okay. Okay.
If Aguirre sticks with it, it could end up being a real tight race for those top two people.
Yeah.
And Fletcher could come in third again.
Yeah.
You know, because it's the traditional base of the Democratic Party that's going to get off their butts and vote. You know, those moderate Democrats aren't necessarily going to go and vote because, you know, they just may not.
Yeah.
Because they're too lazy or they just whatever. They don't bother. They become, you know.
And also, I think, to be honest, it also matters how much Mikey Aguirre pulls of the Latino vote, too. I mean, we haven't talked about that stuff much, but to be honest with you, it's a reality of the fact. I mean,
depends
on how many of them identify, you know.
He could do that, you know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, do you think – I wonder – that's a really interesting – because it's in these tight races that the Latino vote really matters.
Yeah, exactly. That's why
like
I bring this up.
It's not like major races. It's like in races with a big divide, it's like women, you know, black, white men, those kinds of groups. And Latinos tend not as that – being divided into that group doesn't tend to matter, but when it's tight, it doesn't matter.
And then there's also the question of knowledge.
Do they even identify with it? Well,
here's the thing, but here's the knowledge base there, too. That's the problem, because do they vote based on the last name, you know, or the fact that they look and they see? Because let's face it, America, across America, whether you're black, white, brown, or whatever, people vote sometimes based on the reality of who they think identifies with them, even if they don't identify with them.
Yeah.
You know, you could have a rich person who's from any particular group, and people think, oh, hey, he's whatever group he is, and I'm going to vote for that person based on who they are, not based on.
But do you think those kinds of people would even know to go vote? You know, because it's an off year. You know, see what I'm saying? You have to be you'll have to be tuned in to know. Oh, well, today's November 16th, 19th.
Yeah, see what you do. You just go down those neighborhoods and you start getting people down there who want to go push your point. I mean, either, hey, I'm with you. You know, and I mean this, but that's the point that I think it's going to really. It's going to be this could be very interesting. I think it's going to be interesting 90 days. The next 90 days is going to be really interesting in terms of politics in San Diego.
It'll be a good time. That's
It certainly will be. You know, but unfortunately, when we go to the news, we'll be talking about this instead of anything else in the world pretty much for...
you go local first. You know,
exactly.
Like we're not going to hit on Siri, which we should totally shift gears to.
Well, yeah. No, I know we will. But I'm just saying in the news when we do our Fox News stuff, you know, I mean, it's...
Oh, we'll definitely talk about Siri. We're actually having... someone on. We record this on Sunday, so that tomorrow's Monday. Tomorrow morning from Lebanon, from Siri Deeply on the morning show. So
okay,
that should be really good. She's their official correspondent.
Oh, okay.
There.
Oh, so, very cool.
Yeah, and they do some really, really good work.
Yeah, because all I've been doing on the news this last 2 weeks, but pretty much has been nothing but Siri. Filner disappeared off my radar a couple of weeks ago in terms of, you know, really discussing him in the news. Mm-hmm. Everything I've been doing for all the various networks has all been on Syria.
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
Even Egypt. We talked about earlier. Egypt? What's Egypt?
What's going on in Egypt?
Who cares? You know, it's like people forgotten just a few weeks ago, Egypt, which is still in crisis.
Yeah.
And now, just real quickly, Iraq.
Is
having a civil crisis. It's having a civil crisis, which, has been ongoing since the war ended, technically, but now it's escalating, and that becomes even a greater problem.
Here, I have Obama's little 10-minute speech here from the Rose Garden on Syria pulled up here. Let me see if
cool.
I get this to play.
10 days ago, the world watched in horror as men, women, and children were massacred in Syria in the worst chemical weapons attack of the 21st century. Yesterday, the United States presented a powerful case that the Syrian government was responsible for this attack on its own people. Our intelligence shows the Assad regime and its forces preparing to use chemical weapons, launching rockets in the highly populated suburbs of Damascus, and acknowledging that a chemical weapons attack took place. And all of this corroborates what the world can plainly see. Hospitals overflowing with victims, terrible images of the dead. All told, well over 1,000 people were murdered. Several hundred of them were children. Young girls and boys gassed to death by their own government. Now, this attack...
All right. So he's making the case for targeted strikes against Syria.
Yeah. And Assad is saying that he's prepared for us to come and get him.
Yeah, like, Assad's like, what are you going to do? You know, will the Russians allow it, number
one? Well, first of all, the Russians would not get in. I don't believe the Russians would intervene on this. I don't think China would intervene.
But would they even allow us to if we were able to figure out where Assad was?
Yeah.
Would they, or figure out where these missiles are located, or these aircraft are, would they allow us to even bomb these areas without responding.
Yeah.
That's my...
Well, I don't think Russia would do anything. I think Russia, China and the United States are big picture people in the deep, in the far end of this. And what I mean by that is the economics of the world matter more to them than anything else. And keeping the wheels of the economy, global economy going requires stability in regions. Mm-hmm. And particularly in this region is one of those key areas. And, you know, they don't want to see the, they don't want to see the instability. But I also think, you know, the, Obama's made it very clear to them that we're going to do, we might target like the military headquarters or some military areas, you know, installations, not target people, not target Assad directly. They keep saying they don't, they're not planning on toppling, trying to topple him, but they're just trying to basically slap him upside the head for his indiscretions and violating international law.
I mean, I feel like it's like there's a lot of tyrants out there that violate international law in a similar way.
Oh, absolutely.
And we don't do anything about them. I mean, we've talked about this.
Yeah.
In Darfur, there were over a million people killed.
Yeah.
Over a million. That's more than the population of San Diego proper.
Yeah.
I mean, or close to the population of San Diego proper.
But we didn't do anything partially because China had all those like 50 or 70,000 workers that were in Sudan doing work. And then the question became one of once they were on the boots on the ground there, the question became if you actually killed a Chinese national, then now you've got an issue with China to deal with. So the United States very quickly and quietly backed off. I mean, they still were, you know,
this humanitarian argument, and the truth is that it's not about the humanitarian.
Yeah.
It's not about a humanitarian. We're not going after and looking to cripple the Assad regime because
he's killing people.
Because he's killing people.
Yeah.
That's not why. We want to do it because it's important for the economy of the region.
Yeah.
Because we need to keep moving things because they're right up. They share a border with Israel. It matters to Israel a lot.
Yep.
Israel doesn't want Hezbollah getting bases there. Having people put missiles there. They could put missiles or rockets in the back of jeeps that could easily be lobbed over into Israel.
Yeah.
They don't want terrorist groups to use it as a staging area.
Exactly.
They don't want. They want to make sure Russia wants to make sure that they can have because they've got their navy base there that they can keep the free flow of commerce through Syria into Russia.
Yeah.
No problem. There's pipelines that run through there, but it doesn't have anything to do with the people.
No,
and that's
sadly enough.
That's the sad thing, but that's the argument
that's
he's
the reality.
Making.
Yeah,
even though it's not, that's the argument he has to make to the American people because there's no way he could come out and say. And that's the thing that always kind of gets me about these kind of political situations is that you have to. Politicians think that they can't just tell people sort of the truth in a way, you know, and the truth is that this is why we care about this region because Israel matters and because the economy there matters, not because of the people, because hundreds of thousands of people die in other places too.
Yeah.
And we don't do anything about it.
Yeah.
You know,
but the other thing about this,
it's really sad.
Well, it is.
I'm not saying
sad.
We shouldn't do anything about it.
I'm
saying that seems to be less objective. You know, that's the objective truth.
Yeah, that's the hard truth no one wants to hear. And yet, you know, even here we had protested even Balboa Park yesterday about about the war effort. And it's interesting because just a couple weeks ago, even a week ago, people were. You know, hey, okay, well, it looks like we're going to go. And not necessarily go to war. I think people use the word war sort of, you know, so they just kind of use it flippantly. And it really is not it's a really misrepresentation of what actually was going to take place, if anything takes place at this point. So the idea of calling it a war is a little bit far-fetched. We're talking about a strategic strike into an area that, you know, to get their attention because they violated international law. Now the president, you know, because of the reality of what happened in Britain, where David Cameron got shot down in the parliament.
And he accepted it. He was like, okay. And it was great because he put it out of his hands.
Well, you know what he said? No. Well, you know what he said? He goes, well, since we can't do anything now, but, you know, U.S., if you want to go do something. Go right ahead. We'll support you from the back end, but we're not going to, like, send anybody.
Isn't that kind of what they always say, though?
Exactly,
right?
But he didn't have any choice. What could he say at that point? But at least he's following his political edicts. And France did the opposite, which France, because, you know, because Holland does not need to have parliamentary authority in order to go to war or to send troops. Or to get involved in any type of airstrikes. He can do that without any sort of check and balance. Well, now with the changing dynamic, with the reality of the sort of blowback, the negative blowback now about even taking any type of action there, the question becomes for Obama is now they crossed that red line. How do I save face in the midst of all this, right?
Yeah.
And I think he did what any astute political figure would do, is he put it back in the hands of Congress and said, if I own it, you own it. And if you say no, then the answer, then I'll have to contend with that. But it'll be on your heads like it'll be on my head.
Yeah.
And I think that's a political reality that everybody has to confront.
It was a very smart move on his part, politically, yeah. for him to say it's your problem, not
yeah.
mine now.
Yeah.
That's what he did, essentially, was he passed the buck
yeah.
in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So he made his case. This is what I think.
Yeah.
This is what I think we should do.
Yeah.
But you need to decide, because you're Congress now. What do you think? I mean, there's a lot of jingos within Congress right now. I mean, there's a lot of saber rattling
yeah.
Going on. McCain was out saying we should do this.
Yeah, McCain said we should put troops on the ground, you know, which yeah. I don't think we really need to do that anymore.
Yeah,
I think, you know, we got.
It seems like a lot of times a lot of these guys on both sides
yeah.
are. Just take the opposite position for the sake of taking the opposite position.
No.
It's like McCain thought, oh, well, Obama's going to come out against doing anything. Therefore, I'm going to be for it.
Yeah.
That seemed to be what he was doing.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense at all. And you know, I mean, he's not stupid.
No.
You know, that doesn't make any sense at all. It seems to be
such a sort of like a political, such a political
yeah.
maneuver, which
yeah, there's
maneuver. Which
a
transparent
yeah.
political maneuver for those who understand yeah. politics, that you can see kind of clearly through it.
I mean, people who don't understand people
but
saw it as transparent.
But,
I think,
but here's the interesting thing about this that I think is sort of profound is that, you know, people accuse Obama of being sort of wishy-washy in his foreign policy. And I think in some ways, you know, there's an argument where I can see where people stand on that. I really get that. On the other hand, if you think about it in a broader scope, now, every region in the world, every country in the world, we have a foreign policy. We have manuals for big countries that are volumes thick. We have small countries that are smaller volumes. But we also have a long-term view and a short-term view. And so you may have a long-term foreign policy that tells you how to deal with a country and relative security issues, economics, et cetera, et cetera. But you also have to look at, on the short side, it's a very incremental policy, which mm-hmm. means that you have to be able to shift, you know, based on the changes on the ground immediately.
Yeah.
So it looks like you're wishy-washy, but you're only reacting to what's taking place on the ground.
Yeah.
Now, Obama reacted when we heard that the allegation of chemical weapons. Now that the reality is there, now the question is what's going to happen next. Doesn't mean that his policy was so wishy-washy as much as it is he had to shift his policy based on the facts on the ground. Now, the UN inspectors came back yesterday. Now, once that information comes out publicly,
today, I think CNN was reporting that they had found evidence within tissue and hair samples.
Exactly.
To prove definitively that it was chemical weapon. Was
exactly.
Some kind of
chemical weapon was used, whether it was sarin or mustard, we don't know. But I mean, so that's already
mustard
out there.
Mustard gas, that's just so retro.
Oh, I know. It's like, World War One.
Going to war like that's what happened. That's what, if all the steampunk enthusiasts went to war,
yeah.
they would use mustard gas.
Yeah.
I mean, God, what a horrible way to die.
Oh, I know.
It's just a
it is.
Nightmare.
But they used that. That was World War One. I mean, it's
yeah,
so mustard gas
yeah.
in World War One. It shows you how old it is, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
it becomes a real issue, you know.
Yeah.
By the way, see, we have this beautiful organ music playing yeah. behind us, which is really beautiful. So enjoy it while we're pontificating our political thoughts for you.
It's dramatic, so it's apropos to what we're talking about here. although our slight...
All we need is black and white now, huh?
Our gallows humor may not be, but...
But you know, but here's the thing about Syria that I think people, you know, that I think the president is doing what he had to do. I think it's a great political maneuver on his end, whether people love or hate him. I don't really care about that as much as the fact of putting it in the hands of Congress. I think he's going to abide by it.
That
I think he'll abide by it.
Very smart move.
Yeah, yeah. I think the next thing you're going to see is what's going to happen to the UN. Does the UN get involved? I mean, is there any way to punish Syria without taking military action? You know, and that's
yeah.
going to be the interesting question that has to be dealt with on the next phase.
How does this affect the Syrian people? I'm seeing images of just thousands upon thousands of thousands of people just walking out of Syria.
Yeah.
Walking across these border crossings.
Yeah, to Lebanon and to other places.
I mean, just seas of people
yeah.
just trying to get the hell away from
yeah.
Syria because they know what's going on there.
Which, let's face it, other country in the region can afford to take in those kind of refugees, realistically. I mean,
yeah.
who can afford it? You know, I mean, to be honest with you. So
what do you do
with the
so
refugee problem?
There's huge refugee camps
yeah.
right now.
Which the UN has to deal with already. The UN and Red Cross and everybody else has to deal with all that stuff right away. You know, Human Rights Watch, all those have to deal with those issues. So it's a real problem. They've got a real problem on their hands. And the question still goes back to, in the long run, and let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
Do you think Assad survives this?
I don't know. I mean, it seems like the Russians are going to let him survive because he, you know, is deferential to them.
Yeah.
So it seems to me like the Russians don't have a problem with him surviving this at this point in time.
Yeah.
Now, if he ceases to become of use to the Russians, or they find somebody that suits their needs better,
yeah,
then he's dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, whether or not he's going to be able to protect himself from those potential threats, I think is a different story entirely.
Yeah.
Who else are the Russians going to get?
Yeah.
You know, that's the other thing, right? I mean, who else had this authority, has this strength there, this political power? I mean, who else is there that has this? I don't think there is.
Well, I think it's also a question of how the greatest risk of terrorism, like what happens in terms of militant Islam and how much traction they gain. I think Russia's going to have a hard time in the long run if they're not careful about who they...
You think
about,
maybe they'll put like a puppet leader in, or they'll handpick someone that they just happen to like better?
Yeah, I think you could either see a puppet leader or one or the other. If Assad can't make overtures to promise the Russians that he's going
to keep all these extremists,
keep him at bay. If he can do that, then he'll survive this, I think. Yeah. If he doesn't, and I'm backing off what I said before. I actually before thought, and I still have reservations. And I'll say it, but I'm saying with reservation that I think it's hard to put the genie back in the bottle when you kill as many people as he's killed. But on the other hand,
there's people that have done it.
Yeah,
there's people that have survived killing, murdering hundreds of thousands.
Oh, I know. But in this way, just looking at the dynamics of what the people in Syria, the Free Syrian Army, the nationalists who are opposed to him, I don't think he'll ever be safe another day in his life, because I think there'll be people who'll be looking just for his head. So. Yeah. I don't think his ability to lead is going to be mired in this, because what it takes in democracies, and I know it's not a legitimate democracy, but in quasi-democracy, you have to have legitimacy of the people. I don't know if he has legitimacy of the people.
Yeah.
Only a portion of the population have legitimize him, and so it's very hard to move forward, and it's going to be dependent upon how his parliament allows him to move forward. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be a tough sell for him in the long run. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
So do you think Congress approves strikes this week?
No, I don't think Congress is going to approve. I told you they're going to have him write on the board 100 times. I will not use chemical weapons, you know, or some stupid thing like that. But I don't see
they're not going to approve it.
I think they're afraid. I think Congress is afraid. Congress is responding to the political blowback of the national level of how many people don't want to see another war.
Yeah, yeah.
Because again, I think people don't understand what's actually taking place. And that doesn't mean it couldn't escalate into a war.
But
the chance, that's very minuscule. Assad doesn't have the ability. Assad doesn't have the ability to deal with the United States military. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, but do we want to get involved in? We don't want to get involved in any kind of protracted situation again.
Exactly.
We just don't want to do that.
Yeah, we don't want to do it. But on the other hand, can we risk the possibility of what would take place afterwards? And that's the morning after is the biggest concern here.
Yeah.
You know, who, like, even if Assad was gone, could you deal with the new regime based around, you know, the people who've been out of the country for decades, you know, who were forced out, you know, and then those who, in conjunction with the Free Syrian Army, and then the people who are there as the Free Syrian Army, are they going to be, you know, how many of those factions within the army are going to be a problem for us?
Yeah.
And that becomes another question. We don't know. So maybe politically you look and you go, maybe Assad is still the safer bet because of the unbeknownst part of what actually takes place. That's an unfortunate reality, but politically, I guarantee those discussions are being had in every level of government right now.
They have to be had. I wonder, because, you know, Todd Gloria, you know, we both think that he wants to run for Congress.
Yeah.
Which would be great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I wonder what he thinks about these things, because he's going to have to, if he's in that level, he's going to have to take positions on these kinds of issues.
Absolutely.
I wonder where he stands on these kinds of things.
But also, it's a reality of confronting, and this is a tough thing for people to deal with in any country, is the humanitarian aspect. I mean, we sit back and we watch people die, and we get to watch it in a public venue.
Yeah.
You know, and the question is, and usually when you see it publicly in your media.
Yeah, but when push comes to shove, people always say, oh, I'm offended, but when push comes to shove, they don't want to react.
Yeah. Exactly. And that becomes the, you know, you can show them as many pictures as you show them. And then the question is, how do Americans respond to that? Will there become a point where you show them enough, if the media shows them enough, where there'll be sort of a crisis of conscience and you go, you know, well, it's okay. Or if France is going to join with us, that's pretty significant. Maybe we'll go and just shoot something at them, you know, use a bow and arrow or a BB gun and, you know, or something. But we're not going to. But now, whatever major act, not even major, we're not even. I think the actions that he even talked about a week ago are going to be are being quickly diminished in scale as the days go by, and I think they'll continue to be diminished to where this may be a, almost a non-entity in terms of maybe some economic sanctions or some craziness. I mean, what else can you do? I mean, what else can you do in terms of getting at them? You know, unless you send more weapons to the to the insurgents.
I wonder. We'll see Tuesday, right? I mean, they'll come back in. They'll debate all day. They'll probably get to a vote Tuesday.
Yeah.
Wednesday.
Yeah.
I wonder.
Yeah, it's going to be curious to see. We'll be.
You're going to put your money where your mouth is, right? Is it?
Heck
is it dark? Is it too dark to bet on bombing Syria? That's just dark.
Yeah, it's dark. And I mean, even though you could argue,
and that's the thing, when you talk about issues like this, you have to allow yourself
to go to the dark side. You have to think about it
because to make a joke about this, because that's, I mean, psychologically, just talking about so much of this pain, if you don't have any gallows humor, you're not going to be able to emotionally
handle all of this
it, or intellectually handle it, because you're not going to be objectifying it the way you need to objectify things in order to think about things. That's, you know, it's kind of a lot of similar to the way doctors deal with patients.
Exactly.
Doctors have to objectify their patients. They have to think of them as objects, not as people, even though they have to then go back to this, well, they're people, and that's where you end up with this bedside manner kind of.
Exactly.
You know, it's a balancing act.
It's a balance between the research of saying, hey, there's a issue we have to work on scientifically,
but don't mistake my gallows humor for callousness.
Yeah, no, exactly. No, and
a lot of people mistake those things, and it's an easy get when you go after someone for poking fun at a horrible situation. But, you know, that you can.
It's just to give us a little levity, because the truth of the matter is, let's face it, if they decide to bomb, you know, what does that look like? I mean, the tragedy in here, and the fact that, how do we confront the reality of he violated major international law? You know, using chemical weapons has been a direct violation. Of course, Saddam Hussein did the same thing. We didn't really do anything to Saddam Hussein when he violated law.
Tony has done that by recruiting, kidnapping and murdering children.
Exactly.
And we haven't done anything about that.
Exactly. So the question is, does that mean that the law is only good on paper and then we don't have anything left?
Because they're close to Israel and these other things happened in Africa and we don't give a shit about Africa?
Exactly.
I mean, is that what's going on?
Yeah. And those are questions that I think are legitimate questions. And I think the ultimate in this is going to be, what is this? If we don't do something, if something is not done through the UN or by the U.S. in some way, shape, or form through the UN, then what does that mean? What is that? Why have a UN Security Council? Why have international laws that can be violated and with no repercussions? Yeah. I mean, it almost just like the ICC or the ICJ.
There's always that joke about international law, right?
Yeah.
International law only matters is you're only able to enforce international law if you have a big gun.
Yeah.
So you're correct. Your interpretation. The correct interpretation of international law is done by the person with the biggest gun.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the willingness to use that gun.
Yeah.
So while, you know, we have got all these great international law scholars in the United States and globally.
Yeah.
And within the West, we kind of function within that world because we've agreed and, you know, on being kind of countries of laws and nations of laws, not men, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Outside of the West.
Well, here's an interesting question.
Doesn't seem to matter.
Here's
right?
an interesting question for you. Let's switch the roles between us and Russia.
Okay.
Let's say if Russia was dealing with this issue, would Russia go on an attack if the situation reversed and they would set up the United States and because of this issue?
Or would they just poison the guy with radioactive material, right?
Yeah.
Like they did in the UK?
Yeah.
You know, I suppose it depends on where it is and what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. I mean,
see, I think if Russia were sitting in our seat, that Russia would have. I don't think Russia would have.
They would do it.
I think they would have been taken care of. I think it would have been done already. I don't think the Russians would have waited as long as we've waited.
Yeah, but are they? I mean, you could make an argument that they're not. Well, they're not West. You can make that argument first.
Yeah.
They're not really a Western country.
Well, they're not. But I mean, in terms of just sort of how they handle business like this,
are they? Are they? I mean, are they really? Are they? They're an autocracy, or you know, they're not really a democracy or a parliamentary system.
Exactly.
You know, Putin.
I mean, they had their Duma, but the Duma doesn't really, you know,
do anything.
Yeah.
The Duma's a do nothing.
Do
nothing.
Duma.
Whatever Putin wants.
Exactly.
That's pretty
Which
much
is unfortunate.
Goes,
I mean, there are people there who really care about what they do, but I think if you look at the bigger picture, Putin runs the show, and ultimately whatever he wants goes, and if he would just deal with the political blowback, because the political blowback to him is very fairly.
And then he would be thinking, what are you going to do, invade?
Yeah.
I'm sure that's, you know, I mean, you know, there's always other things, other ways of dealing with conflict even on a world stage, you know.
Yeah.
But
I think we should get two Rock'em Sock'em robots, you know, and let them
Assad on one side,
yeah, exactly.
And everyone else on the other.
Yeah.
There you go. Hungry, hungry hippo, your way out of this.
Exactly. And just see whose head pops off first.
Stop fucking killing children.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, seriously. You know,
that's the part that, I mean, if you want to, you know, go get in the ring and put your boxing gloves on and see who best man win, you know.
Okay, you have your military, they military, you go, you fight your war, then you make the change in society that will result as a result of fighting that, whoever won and lost that war. Just like, just kill a bunch of kids.
Yeah, I mean, their lack of human rights, human dignity.
Don't even see these people as human beings.
Yeah, especially the poor people in Syria. They don't see them. They're just like,
they're just
chips on a they're chips on a chessboard, you know, or something. It's just ridiculous.
It's sad,
you know,
and you can't blame checkerboard.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't blame people for just freaking the fuck out.
Yeah,
I would. I mean, if I was there and somebody killed my kid, I would make it my mission in life to kill whoever it is I thought killed my child.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So here's the question.
And
now,
I wouldn't care what side I had to take.
Well, exactly. If you had to go get with a militant Islamic organization to get your revenge, you would do what
I
you
would
had
do it.
To.
Absolutely.
But here's the next question in there.
And anybody who says they wouldn't, they have a kid, is an absolute liar.
Yeah.
Now, is it the right thing to do? No.
No.
It's not the right thing to do.
If you hurt my kid, I'm going to find
a way
to...
That's an entire... But then that flips that other switch in your brain and you turn into a monster, you know?
Well, here's the thing, though. So let's say you've got over 100,000 people we know that are dead, probably significantly higher than that.
Oh, yeah.
So now all the people that you've killed, if you take their family, their extended families, you've now probably got about anywhere from 500,000 to 10 to a million people who hate you.
At least.
I'm talking about small, if you take a number of five people per family, which is probably more like 10 to 20.
Yeah.
But let's say, so you get anywhere from 500,000 to maybe 2 million people who hate your guts. That ultimately, because you killed a brother, father, mother, sister, you know, cousin, whoever. Or all of the above. How do you survive that? I mean, I just don't see how you survive that.
Well, the question is whether or not those people can organize.
Yeah.
If those people can organize, then they can have an effect.
Or the danger is they organize with the wrong group. Oh, they organize with a militant Islamic group.
Whoever is able to organize those angry people and take that rage and focus it will absolutely win and take over
that
situation.
And that's even a scarier notion of not being in control of that mechanism, particularly if it's a militant Islamic group.
Yeah.
Who typically throw money at them and they go, "Oh, we love you because of money, not because we love you."
Yeah, yeah.
Then we've got a bigger problem than just going and having a strategic strike now.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people have to consider, and the bigger ramification of what actually takes place in the situation.
Yeah.
It's a much more dangerous, bigger picture than if you're not careful, than if you don't contend with it now. And I think sometimes, like, you can fix it now or you can fix it later, but usually when you fix it later, it costs you a hell of a lot more.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Don't believe me? Ask about my car, right? So, anyhow.
On that pleasant note.
We'll hope for next week we'll have better news on Syria. At least, hopefully, we'll see, at least have some dialogue about that. And hopefully,
Todd Glory's going to talk to us over the phone.
Oh, great.
Thursday afternoon.
Oh, sweet.
So, if you're available.
Yeah.
We can conference call the whole thing in.
Oh, cool.
And that should be interesting.
Yeah, it should be interesting.
And I'm working on, getting Nathan and Mike.
Yeah.
Come on, too. It'll be good to get all the candidates, you know. And I'm sure we'll get Carl. I've been working on getting DeMille for a while, but he's kind of, now that he's going to be more of a public figure, I suppose it depends on whether or not he decides to run or not.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure closer to his congressional race, if he stays in the Congress, then he'll come on. But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. It also means how much the controversy, you know, hammers him up, too, you know.
I think he's been able to handle it pretty well up until now, although... He did stuff like he's spinning it, right? He's trying to spin it, and which, you know, I can't blame him. The guy's smart.
Oh, absolutely.
The guy's really smart. He's trying to spin it to make it a sort of a Democratic attack on him.
Yeah.
To say that, and at the same time use it to show that the Democratic Party's fractured in San Diego. And he's doing that by saying things like, while Ben Wessel made this accusation, both Todd Gloria and Tony Young say that Ben Wessel is lying, even though that's not what Todd Gloria and Tony Young said.
No.
So he's trying to spin it.
Yeah. The question is whether people recognize it as a spin and there's a concern or not. I'm just saying these things have a long history, unfortunately, of blowing back on you, and especially with you know, with the current allegations, it ends up creating a little problem for him, and at least in the short term,
yeah.
You know, and he'll have to try and weather that storm.
Whether or not it'll matter for him in the long term, or not,
yeah.
I suppose it's a different story.
Yeah, that remains to be seen.
I don't know if it will.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. We'll see. Yeah, well, we'll have to follow up and see how it goes. You know?
I mean, at this point, it doesn't matter if it's true or not.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the problem.
That's the problem with politics, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's true.
People
or
say
not.
It gets public, and all of a sudden, whether you're guilty by association, yeah. Whether you actually until it's later, unless it's completely dispelled, which
yeah.
At this point it hasn't been. So that makes it really problematic, you know, for
yeah,
him.
And
so.
It does. Yeah. And it doesn't matter if it's true or not.
Yeah.
Which in a lot of ways is really too bad. You know, I wouldn't have run this story with that one statement.
Yeah.
Especially
at that point, that's really some cooperative evidence. You really need to make sure. Yeah, you need to have somebody else.
Because you're really assassinating someone's character.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it did, though.
Yeah. And then you're talking about major lawsuit against the individual for, you know, I mean, that's a big
step.
We'll see,
step,
right? You know,
we'll is he going to sue? He had his lawyer write the letter.
Yeah.
Now, the question is whether or not they sue, because Voice of Orange County said, basically, was like, yeah, whatever, fuck off.
Yeah.
Just stand by our story.
Yeah.
Do whatever you're going to do.
Yeah.
And they're not, while they tend to be left-leaning, I mean, they're pretty reputable.
Yeah.
Along the same lines of Voice of San Diego.
Yeah.
Kind of organizations.
Yeah, sort of moderate left, you know what I mean?
Yeah. They're definitely left.
Yeah, but not on the fringe of left, you know?
No,
so
they're not just, like, publishing propaganda.
Yeah, yeah. So it'd be interesting to see what happens. We'll follow up on this next week and see what...
TMZ version of San Diego politics.
Have a good one, you guys.
All right, see you later.